And good afternoon or good evening to all of my listeners. This is Lina Live, and I'm your Lina Mirmond with another show. Very exciting show, because I have a very special guest, the youngest guest so far I had. He is 10 years old in his calendar, but he's way, way more mature than 10 years old. In fact, you all will be convinced in this in a few seconds. But before just jumping into my fantastic dialogue with this very brilliant young man, I wanted to wish all of my listeners, and especially BBS friends, a wonderful holiday time. I also like to extend my and my son's congratulations to Dan's birthday. And then the reason I know about this is because my son's birthday also. So I guess in some ways we have a harmony, because those two gifted men being born on the same day, and somehow God helped them to find each other in this universe. And now we are conducting this very special dialogue using radio waves. So on this note, I'm going to introduce my very wonderful guest. His name is Michael Rubenstein. In fact, I wanted to make sure that I pronounce his last name as a Rubenstein, not Ruinstein. He indicated that that's the only way to pronounce this way, because he wants to be as authentic and as devoted to his Russian cultural roots, even though he was born in this country. But for some reason, he still has quite an attachment to his Russian background. Well, it's not terribly surprising. His parents are Russian. In fact, they are very gifted musicians in their own rights. And Michael certainly inherited those traits, but he added to his life a lot of excitement, branches, activities, and accomplishments. So I'm going to let Michael to speak about himself, and just we'll let him speak whatever he wants to speak about. And here's Michael. Michael, I'd like to ask you, what is the most impressive things you feel you've done in your life?
Well, I do enjoy playing the board game chess and checkers, board games actually. It is very mental, and it helps you out with like a lot of different strategies that you can use in actually real life, like good thinking and skills. I also enjoy playing certain sports like bowling, basketball, soccer, tennis, ping pong, and so on. These kinds of sports I just am good at, and I enjoy playing them a lot. It's just like I played for a long time. I played these sports for a long time, and I'm starting to become good at it, and I just like playing those sports.
Well, I certainly not the only one who impressed with your accomplishments and diversification of your activities. I happen to know that you are incredibly devoted to chess. We're not even talking yet about your music talent, which we will discuss a little bit later, but your chess talent and your devotion to the game was quite outstanding. You can tell us a little bit more detailed. When did you start to play chess? What does it take? And I did like your comment, such a mature observation, that it does develop your mind, especially when you're developing skill of strategy. So let's go a little bit more into play of chess.
Well, going a little bit more into this mind sport, that's what some people like to call it, because it does help your mind go deeper into how strong you can already think. Well, this chess is like a very common board game. I started playing this game when I was over. I already enjoyed. I studied it when I started looking at the chess when I was 2. Started playing it for real when I was 3, and now since I'm 10, I'm starting to become better and better every day and year, week, month, year that I'm playing. Not yet a century.
Wow, this is so much about the big picture plans with a quite detailed description. Now, I wanted to ask you about the competition. And you know, we all thrive in the competitions, but sometimes it's a little bit painful to lose. Sometimes it's a little disappointing to lose. How do you take a sense of competition? What is a competition for you?
A competition is mostly like just a small game that just depends on one small little talent of yours. Like chess competitions, I really enjoy, like, because I've been to many tournaments already and I've collected a few trophies and a few medals. I don't want to say how many because there are a lot of them. Then also I have, like, you know, I play with, also there's another strategy that you can use in chess. You play with a clock. Okay. It helps you time yourself in chess. It helps you think faster, and it lets you, like, proceed with, like, a quicker way of playing chess. Because normally, chess games with time are played for 1 minute each. Blitz games are a little different from chess, because in Blitz, sometimes you have to go a little faster because you play for 5 minutes at least. And also,
I like to jump because you pointed something about the time and quick thinking. I could not resist to interrupt you because, frankly, I had great difficulties to think fast when I was a little girl. In fact, I found to play slow music somewhat more natural than even fast music. And I don't want to jump into the music, which we're going to discuss a little later. How does it help you to time yourself in life in terms of timing or time? And how does it help you playing chess to be, if not more organized, it sounds somewhat boring, but how does it make you to be aware of time in life?
Well, technically, when this is just like really random, because sometimes when I'm running out of time and I'm still doing my homework, I start to go a little quicker, but I still choose to do it carefully. Just like in chess, just because you start rushing doesn't mean you have to stop being careful of your moves and how you play. Also, and speaking of how I lose and how I react to it, I normally just keep my face in a neutral position. I never stop. I don't smile when I start winning, unless it's not worldwide, because that's a different question. Also, if I start to win or lose, when I started winning once, and I lost after that, I was very upset, but I didn't show my emotions because I don't want anybody to actually notice how sad I really was. Inside, you know, I'm really upset, but outside, you know, I leave it as a normal, neutral expression.
Stunning maturity. I am totally blown away. Because to control your emotions and to compartmentalize your emotions are extremely, extremely difficult self-control to develop for adults. But I think, I don't know if you agree with me, but I think this is something very typical for the artists, for performers, because things can go on stage. And you still have to, Exactly. You can miss up, and I'm sorry you've been off the microphone, but I'm rushing to give you back microphone so you'll continue on your thought. But I was so deeply taken by this incredible description of how crisp, clearly you describe your emotions inside and how you control and not to show them outside. Totally stunning thing. So let's talk about how you studied chess. You had a teacher. I know your father plays a tremendous role. But could you tell us a little bit, if you like to talk about your father? That would be just as great.
Well, yes, my dad does teach me. But not only does he teach me with his playing, we also look in books. And some positions in some of those books, or just games that are played in the books, are like... just, like, simple, but, like, one of the books that I read, it had like, difficulty levels. Difficulty level 2, which was, like, totally easy for me. Difficulty level 3, a little harder. 4, a little bit, I had a lot of trouble in level 6. Level 8 was the hardest, except... I figured out it was only 3 level 8s, and it wasn't so that, like, extreme. I didn't only play chess because I liked the sport. I was inspired. A few people that I saw play were really good, like world champions, like Bobby Fischer or Susan Polgar, a woman chess champion. I just saw how they played, and I was inspired to do harder than what I already, how hard I already play. And as we sometimes say in chess, you see a good move, look for a better one.
Wow. You see the good move and look for the better one. I think we can take it as a title for the resolution for the new year. These are so remarkable. Well, can I ask you, what was your most memorable game, for example? Was it with a child of your age, or maybe it was with your father, or maybe it was just a solution of some kind of a puzzle from the book? What was the most memorably challenging in your chess life?
Well, there are many that I would remember for a long time, but there's one that I have remembered for a very long time, a year or two. It was actually the game where I earned my first trophy. It was against Susan Polgar, the woman champion of the world. She was, like, very good in chess, and I tried my hardest, and... well, I don't know if anybody beat her. Well, I didn't. I got second place in the tournament.
I'm sure she cannot forget you.
Well, I was like one of the only kids who was playing against her. Most of the people who were playing against her were adults. I don't think she expected a kid who actually wanted to challenge her.
I'm sure she's still struggling with the experience.
Well, that wasn't my only game playing her. It was once I went to this chess club somewhere which I also played against her. Again, I didn't win, but I once saw a move that almost beat her, but then I forgot it, and I didn't make it. And I lost after that.
Would you say, maybe it's a bit of a complicated question, but see how you will take it. Would you say that sometimes the process of a game is more rewarding than the result, winning or losing?
Well, yes. Like once I said, when I was winning a game and then I lost, I did enjoy the first few moments of when I was winning, but, you know, it didn't last so long. Because my opponent just started playing, like, extreme against me. And, you know, I didn't start that.
And then you feel a certain character of your opponents. Then you feel somewhat, perhaps a little human contact or a little bit human confrontation. In other words, the chess game becomes somewhat a little bit of a live game. Would you agree with this? Or
not that much. I mean, it doesn't really connect to my everyday life. It just upsets me for the first few moments when I lost at the end.
I see. Now, I heard that you wrote your own book of chess. That is something very special. That certainly presents another quality, which is patience.
Well, actually, I started writing the book. I think I still saved it on the computer, but I don't think I have that. I didn't. I only started for like the first few days. I started typing like certain ways that you can win in chess quickly in the beginning of the game. It's like first simple, just like the book that I studied in. First simple mates, then a little harder, and even then the hardest.
Obviously, your school curriculum gets a little busier. You're getting more of a homework, and with this, what is the placement of your chess in your life presently, and what are your plans?
Well, I didn't practice for quite a while now, but I plan to do it a little more now when I have the chances. Tomorrow I might practice. Today I don't know if I have the chance because I might get home a little late.
Now let's go to your another talent, and that is music. That's something almost was programmed and predictable because of your parents' music talent. I had a tremendous pleasure, actually, to hear you play. You are a performer, and you're enjoying it, and you love to be on stage. And you're also playing quite a serious piece of music already. So let's talk about your music life. What is about music you feel the most engaging, most exciting?
Well, I like fast songs and music. Slow songs don't entertain me as much. Well, slow songs I normally listen at night. Well, you know, when I need to go to sleep, I just like listening to music before then. But I don't really listen to that much of a slow song because I listen to Mozart's songs, because Mozart is one of my favorite composers other than Beethoven, Bach, and Tchaikovsky.
Wow. Mozart songs. Yes, I happen to know them, but they are not really as often performed as, for example, Schubert songs. Who introduced you to Mozart songs?
Well, my dad played a few of Mozart's songs on the piano, and I heard them, and I asked him who wrote those songs. He told me it was Mozart, and I asked for a CD of Mozart, and it turns out that I really enjoyed his songs. Beethoven also was one of my favorite composers, too, because, in fact, this year, when I played in Steinway Hall, a concert on the piano, I played one of his songs, Bagatelle. It was one of my favorite songs that I ever played on the piano.
Bagatelle, that's something brings my childhood. I don't think anyone can go by Bagatelle by Beethoven. Beautiful dance. And there's something about Beethoven, I don't know if you will agree with me or not. He didn't know really how to play, and I should say how to write for children. He already had extremely mature music for children. I remember his very deceptively named Six Easy Sonatinas, and one could spend quite a bit of hours and months of learning these Six Easy Sonatinas. Well, perhaps it was easy for him, but not for the rest of the world. But let me ask you about this Bagatelle. How long you've been studying that, and how many you played? And also tell me, when you played this Bagatelle, that was the only piece you played, or you played something else?
Oh no, I played a lot of different songs, but this was my only Bagatelle that I played, the 11th one actually. Well, and by the way, when you mean that Beethoven didn't write children's music, what do you mean by children's? Like 10 years old, 9 years old, 5 years old?
What a wonderful question. I would associate more with emotions, not that much the numbers. I would not associate Beethoven music with some child's emotions. I would associate Mozart with that, but not Beethoven. So perhaps answering your question, I would say that it is my personal association with more of a grown, profound emotions rather than just with the little child emotions. I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, you know, it's just that Beethoven and Mozart are like equally I enjoy. There's no better composer between those two. I mean, they're sort of like the same level for me. I rate them both a 10.
And that's a wonderful attitude. I see we have a little problem here because the earphones which Michael has, and he is demonstrating tremendous patience, are itching his ears. And I feel so sympathetic with that. I just incredibly sorry for that. But I think what we're going to do now is to ask, for example, I think we can have a little break and hear Michael playing. And we're going to ask Michael to introduce his own pieces and explain what he's going to play. So Michael is going to put his earphones back and tell us what he's going to play. Oh, he want me to introduce it? Is that okay? Oh, you introduce. Okay.
Well, the following two songs are going to be the second song is going to be my first and last duet. And the first one was Prelude in C minor by Bach. These two songs are like I played. Oh, not that. Like, not this. Not. Well, I played them like a little bit long ago. Yeah, 5 years ago.
Okay, so we're going to hear now their authentic performance by my wonderful guest, Michael Rubinstein, who is playing Prelude in C minor by Bach. Thank you. And I'm certainly joining applause to this wonderful performance to do a little bit of musical analytical approach. The polyphony was so clear, and your bass voice was so distinct. And the whole thing, something brought me back again to my childhood, because this piece was, even though part of the repertoire of each of us, but needless to say, never, it was boring, of course, but everyone saw its own little corner of musical expression there. And I wanted to thank you for this lovely reminiscent moment for myself. Would you like to comment on this, please?
I wouldn't comment on this piece, but can I say one thing about back going back to the Beethoven doesn't like children's music? Actually, the 11th Bagatelle, the one that I played, it does sound a little bit active for kids. If I could play it, well, you could see what I mean, but still, right now, we're going to listen to a duet, my first and my last duet, me on piano and my cousin, Alina Fader, on flute.
And I just wanted to add a couple of things. It is particularly very special when family duet is taking place. That much bond, which is expressed in everyday life and then in music life, that correlates to certain thoughts which I'm expressing in my programs, how everything is connected. And the more we have those connections in everyday life and among our family members, the more precious and more profound we connected. So let's hear another special performance of Michael Rubinstein and his cousin. Well, that was quite a performance, and Michael will comment. I'm dying to know how old he was, how old his cousin was. I'd like to know how long did it take them to practice. It was true duet, not only because they start and finish together, but they've been finishing their thoughts and their musical phrases together, which is even more precious. So, Michael, let's hear your comments.
Believe it or not, this did take a lot of practice, but we didn't practice together. We actually practiced separately, and then we played the only once together.
Wow, that's so much for family connection.
Indeed. Well, actually, I used to practice on playing flute when I was in band. I quit because I wasn't that much of a player on flute, and it was a lot of fun playing the flute. And I think I still have a flute at home. Yeah. And I never played it. I didn't play it yet. But still, I plan on trying to practice again and start at least going on a different instrument other than the piano and then practice for guitar.
That's one thing. In fact, I like to make one comment. I think in one of my programs when I interviewed a very talented documentary filmmaker, we've been talking that description and true, real feeling of his documentary almost fighting the barriers of invisibility of the radio. I don't even know if such a word exists. Invisible is, but I strengthened the quality of somewhat radio limitations, saying invisibility. But the point of it is that where I'm sitting in my studio with Michael, a lot of action's actually taking place. So I'm trying to transmit and share with all of you how fantastic it is to have his father, who is very quiet but extremely expressive in his silence, watching our beautiful program. And, of course, my beautiful son, who is engineering all of this. And Michael, who is just such a fantastic conversationalist. So I cannot wait to invite him back to the microphone and ask him what is his next musical program.
What do you mean by my next musical program?
Are you studying anything right now? Are you preparing program? You're a performer. I'm sure something taking place in your life right now with music.
Not really. I just enjoy listening to songs right now. I'm just taking a break. Well, other than playing songs, I want to express something that's going on in my school.
Please do so, but just before we will get off the subject of the music, did you try to compose music?
Yes, I started writing a song, but I took a little break. Until the holidays are over, I will start writing the song again.
And now we are shifting to another topic which you wanted to discuss, and I did interrupt you.
This isn't much of a new topic, actually, because I'm talking about a play that's going on in my school. The play was called You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. I'm sure a few people heard about Charlie Brown, an animated series of a kid who feels bad about himself. And his friends are trying to cheer him up. This is Your Good Man Charlie Brown specifically. I auditioned for a certain part, but I didn't get it because I got a different kind of part. I got the main part, Charlie Brown. And now I'm working my way up to getting, getting all the songs and monologues mastered of this play. So far, I'm making a lot of progress.
I would not doubt that, but how much does it take to make a lot of progress?
Well, what do you mean by how much?
I'm sorry, you're right. How much time, effort, and your energy does it take to make a lot of progress?
Well, I did practice a lot at home, in my head and out loud to myself and to my dad. But there was this solo which I practiced a lot. It's called The Kite. Charlie Brown has to try to get a kite to fly, and he's not managing. But I practiced a lot at home. But in rehearsal, it took me only one day to get that song down right.
Wow. Can I ask you a question? Do you feel that you're Charlie Brown yourself, or you still feel that you have your own identity, but only when you're practicing, you are Charlie Brown?
Well, I guess I'm not really Charlie Brown because I don't feel so bad about myself. I have at least a little bit of self-esteem.
Wow. So much about self-conviction. Please tell me a little bit about this character. And is it someone who doesn't have enough self-esteem because he was hurt before, or because he is just wished to be like this, present himself in the world? How do you feel about this character? Just describe it.
He is very polite, so I would describe him like that. That's one good characteristic about him, but a bad characteristic, a negative one, is low self-esteem. So he's not much of a person who thinks about himself a lot.
And what kind of a treatment do you feel he gets from the outside world as a result of feeling this way about himself?
Well, one of his friends, his name is Linus, and both of the Linuses that are acting in the play, we have two casts, or my classmates and my friends. In my cast, one of the kids named Marco, and he is supposed to be like the best of Charlie's friends. The other kids, especially a girl named Lucy, have to behave a little like they have to behave negative to him, to Charlie Brown. They have to say negative things about him, except Linus. And even Charlie Brown thinks that Linus doesn't like him. He thinks that nobody likes him at all. Nobody. Not even his best friend.
That's an unfortunate situation with the people who have a very low self-esteem. I think it's very special that you have ability to go inside of this character and almost get some feeling how bad does it not only even feel, but how much you're provoking of a sad treatment from the outside world. And this is something a little bit touch of a philosophy, I understand. But in the same time, I like to ask you, do you feel that self-esteem is one of the major personal qualities you like to have, or you feel some others just as important?
Well, technically it's both, because self-esteem is an extremely important part of your life. It helps you be, well, it helps you actually be happy in life, because this way you can at least think of some of the good things you do. Charlie Brown has no self-esteem at all, so he doesn't think of one thing that he's good at.
I think what we will do now to reflect on this very profound thought about self-esteem, and I think the best is to have another piece of music, and this time we will invite Julian Lampert's composition, after which we will continue my final segments with just very special, wonderful young man. I would not even call him young boy because of his fantastic maturity and certainly something I can learn from. And on this note, let's continue to Julian Lampert's note. However, I have a little signal from Michael because he wants to add something before we will hear Julian Lampert music.
After the music, what do you mean? What am I supposed to say after that? Random things about myself? Because I can have a lot of them.
Wow. Don't we have a very exciting time after the music? We're all looking forward to that.
Okay, just to let the listeners know, the next profession of mine is going to be mineral studies.
And I will be talking a little bit until Michael will come back. He is going to think of his next little story about the minerals, and I will talk about my minerals. And I wanted to take this opportunity and to share with all of you the most incredible fascination and endless surprise how much we think little brain can offer to us. They're only little by non-definition, just because they are just so global, so incredibly bottomless. And what a special pleasure that is to learn from those little brains. And if we are open with our big brains to those small brains, then we create this near stage of the harmony. That's what I hope to continue doing, teaching and conducting my children's workshop, where this exchange and where this transmission of our, I would say, little big and big little thoughts will take place. And now I see back, smiling, charming Michael. By the way, needless to say how handsome he is. Needless to say, he came with such shoes. I'm dying to have his shoes. And he is just loving wearing them. So I'm going just to enjoy them. And we're going to enjoy Michael's story about his minerals.
Just to let you know, it's not only minerals. It's also crystals, gems, and rocks. This kind of study I started only this year because I have a lot of these kinds of things. I have plenty of certain kinds of crystals. I have, for example, my precious kinds of crystals are ruby, one. I have two topazes. If any of you know what a topaz is, it's a very rare kind of crystal, not crystal, mineral that is often used in jewelry, and it's like very expensive. I have two of them. Also, I have a lot of quartz, generally quartz, crystal quartz, green quartz, purple quartz, gold quartz, rose quartz. I have a ton of them. Also, I have this certain kind of rock that actually is considered the only rock that is not real. Fool's gold. A lot of you people know what fool's gold is because it actually used to be considered real gold back then for the cavemen. But the first time fool's gold was discovered, it was actually found not real gold because compared to real gold, gold is much harder than fool's gold. I have a big piece of fool's gold about this big. Wait, you people can't see it, so technically I can't really show you how big it is. About three inches wide, 3 inches tall. I also have one ruby. I told you that before, but this ruby's not polished, so it's like a natural kind of ruby. You can't use it in jewelry just yet. If there's anything you'd like to say right now about these crystals so far, just ask.
I'm drowned in this information. It is so incredibly punctual with your description. It is truly remarkable knowledge you have about them. The only thing I will add on a very modest level, that some crystals have some healing properties. I don't know if you know about this. And yes, you agree with this. So that's how much I know about it. May I ask you, have you seen any particular crystals and stones in a museum and Smithsonian Institute, which you, I understand, recently visited at your, I think, spring break or something like that? Mm-hmm. So could you share if that's something relevant to our discussion?
Well, yes, actually, one of my favorite kinds of rock that I saw, and I have a big piece of it. It's called the banded onyx. Onyx, in a very, very long time ago, in a certain period of time, used to be more valuable than gold. And I have an enormous piece of banded onyx and a small piece of black onyx, the black onyx I bought in a kit of non-polished natural gemstones, jewels of the rough. It was a collection of both rocks and jewels, minerals, crystals, and gems. I think I mentioned, in that are naturally found. They're not polished. Another set that I bought, well, actually not I bought. I didn't buy it with my own money. My dad did. With his own money. Please say a good applause to my dad.
Well, we'll join applause to his dad because we can certainly add more incredible applause to this most fantastic person whose, I quote, fatherhood is just so exceptional, whose, I would say, totally inseparable persona from him being outstanding musician in his own rights. And to be a person and a father, I also have to say that when we get together, I'm watching their dialogue. I think that's one of the reason Michael is so beautifully matured in his self-expression. This is truly remarkable way of such freedom of dialoguing with the world. I feel Michael already is opening any doors he wants. I think just this lecture he gave us about crystals can be placed in any Ivy League school of the country. But the most important, the way he placed himself in this very complex world, which we discussed so many times in my previous programs, gives me tremendous satisfaction and confidence that if indeed there is a great parenthood, there is indeed a great children who not only know what they want, but they know how to express themselves. So on this more adult note, I'm returning to Michael because he's the guest and he still has something to express.
Well, actually, I forgot to mention, because I started plotting for my dad, but I forgot to mention the second pack that my dad bought for me. It was polished gemstones of the world. And it has some and it was worth more than the previous pack, even though it has less specimens, because this pack includes the kind of, like prettier, kind of more beautiful kind of gems. For example, the tiger eye or the amethyst, those two in the natural gemstone collection, especially the tiger eye, looked ugly.
But it's still Mother Nature. This is something you reminded me when I was visiting Utah, Salt Lake City. I did buy some stones for myself, and I will show it to you. In fact, you can see them in the foyer of our house, because I glue it to little parts of the foyer as a decoration. So I think it is marvelous combination when you really can hold in your hands, as you said, unpolished stones to have this connection with Mother Nature, to have this beautiful aesthetic contact with this. And also you really can feel the history. I think we're coming to the coda of our very memorable interview. I like to say a few words as a post-thoughts. However, I like to give Michael opportunity to express his thoughts and whatever he wants to say as a conclusion of our interview.
Well, yes, and this is just the beginning of what I can say about my collection. I could keep talking and talking about this stuff, but still, I know a lot. But one of my friends, his name is Giovanni, he studies with me. We both plan to open up our museum of both of our collections. Seriously, between you people and me, I have more than him.
We are privileged to learn a few secrets here. What a precious exchange that was. I cannot thank enough Michael to be so open to us, to share with us so many different facets of his life. not only I will offer him another interview if he will choose to, but I think all of us can see how much of this children's world we can relate to, we can share with. And the most important is to feel that when we are trying to find our own roots, to find some questions we have, we should really think and to be very open-minded about our children, because there are a lot of answers right there. I see Michael is signaling me. So before we will get to absolute very conclusion of our program, I will certainly give Michael another opportunity, a short one at this point, because we're running out of time. And then after this, I will say my usual goodbye with the usual beautiful piece by Julian Lampert. So here's Michael with his final words.
I have two things to say. First, Giovanni, if you're listening, I'm just kidding. I was just kidding. Oh. And second of all, believe it or not, it's hard for me to carry all my crystals around because some of them were fragile and they could break way easily. So this was like my first time on the radio, so goodbye.
That was such a fantastic debut. I cannot imagine a better holiday present for all of us to have this contribution of this beautiful, very mature, and yet so young gentleman. We're all wishing him the most of the success. We congratulate him with the magnificent father he has. And we're also very thankful to his father because he is a musician and a person, as I said, in his own right. But he always feels that Michael, not only intricate part of his life, but that Michael is his life. On this note, I will say a few words of my holiday thoughts and holiday wishes to all of you. Again, our great congratulations to Dan's birthday. I'm thanking Seth for being our engineer today. I'm thanking all BBS Radio for giving me this extra opportunity to have an interview. And the most important, I wish the station to be prosperous, successful, and just as open-minded in the new year as they were in this year. On this goodbye, that was Lena Life. I'm your Lena Mermont. Until next show on Tuesday.